And we are back. Myself, Andy Pate, JT Young joining us now, American Spectator. JT, how are you?
I am fine. Thank you so much for having me on today.
I appreciate it. The left, the radical left, and Democrats, three P's, one pod. I think Andy would agree with you on that one.
Yes.
Good.
JT, let me ask you a question here really quick. It has been really surprising to see the rise of the radical left in the Democrat Party, not because they haven't always had it, they have, but usually you will see a party, the radical elements rise in popularity because there is great discontent in the party with the results they're getting. Okay? We're not getting the results we need. We need to get more radical, right? And yet, right, through Obama and Biden and those times, they were getting a lot of the results they wanted nationally. I mean, in the courts and everywhere else, they were really steering this country hard left, and they still weren't happy. Why?
I think what you saw was 2018 was a real watershed. I think the entire left was stunned by the results of 2016. They never expected Trump to win. They didn't expect Trump to be Trump once in office. And then you got, if you'll remember, the squad came in 2018, and they really had a sea change. I think that the overall left became unhinged, and they were really willing at that point to follow a more radical direction because they just felt that they had been so, that they were so adrift after having followed their party's establishment into the Hillary candidacy and losing. And, you know, I think it's fair to remember as well, in 2016, had the deck not been stacked against him, Bernie Sanders would have won that nomination.
True. JT, I mean, do you think that their hatred for a personality, that being Trump, brought out their inner radical in many Democrats?
I think what it did is it made them susceptible to listen to a radical left. And then when Biden won, Biden was an incredibly weak president. You know, he really had little support of his own. If you look back at the primaries, Biden survived and he would just pick up a portion of as candidates dropped out. And, you know, he became by default their nominee. And so he came into office extremely weak. His base was very small, and he had really little personal allegiance. So I think he found himself in a position where he was really beholden to the left, the whole left, and he had to go radical, you know, he felt, in order to govern.
Interesting. I don't know that you – I mean, I can't disagree with you on any of that. I don't think Andy and either one can. I think we've even talked about that particular end of things on air. And here's the question. How long can the Joe Bidens of the world, he's not in charge any longer, but how long can he keep Bernie's and AOC's and those that are a part of the party in check, JT? Because you know for a while that's what was happening. But now that Biden is no longer in charge, in fact, you know, we're learning more and more that he's had some health issues that have been covered up for quite some time, which is a topic in and of itself. But the reality is, you know, the Biden regime is no longer in charge. Who's going to keep these nut jobs in check?
It's a great question. It's a great question, John, because I think what you're going to see, and we need to be bracing for 2028, because you can see the movements are already afoot. I don't know if you've been following this. A member of the new Democrat leadership, last name of Hogg, H-O-G-G,
David Hogg,
who has announced, you know, targeting establishment Democrats or Democrats who don't go far enough left. You know, Nancy Pelosi has already been primaried in her district, and lo and behold, who should it be that's done it? Former campaign manager for AOC. So I think, to your point, not just Biden dropping away, but yeah, I think there's a wholesale attack on the Democrat establishment leadership from the left because, you know, once they've let them in, sort of the camel's nose, the camel follows.
True.
And that they now can't get rid of them. And they are also very dependent on them. You know, these are the people who are so motivated. They go to the rallies. They go to the town halls. They contribute. And, you know, parties are made and make and break the party on the people who are the most motivated. And the most motivated are clearly the most radical right now in the Democrat Party. So they can't really tell them. I know that we've been hearing James Carville saying that it would be better if these extreme progressives would just go their own way. But, you know, the reality is that the Democrat Party couldn't survive if they did. They need them. They're already hemorrhaging support. You know, they just lost last November. They see an electoral map that's heavily stacked against them right now. They can't really be throwing people out of their party.
You know, JT, I think one big word comes to mind, and that is energy. And what I mean is this. It's like they have energy envy because they look across at the Republican Party, obviously led by an immensely energetic person named Donald Trump, but also all the people who work with Trump are high energy, high energy, high energy, high energy. And then you look on the left, and the only way that they can get energy is with their radicals. Could that be a big reason they're turning to their radicals? Because right now, when they look at the energy of the right and they are envious of it, they can't look back at the people they've been putting up.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think, again, you know, their whole leadership generation has kind of aged out. You think you know, we've been seeing a tour, basically, of Bernie Sanders and AOC going on the road. It just feels like a passing of the torch because here you have, you know, an octogenarian and then you have her who's, you know, at least half a century his junior. You know, Pelosi is advanced in years. They, you know, Chuck Schumer is terrified that AOC will challenge him in a primary in New York. I mean, their whole leadership is quite old, and I think going back to your observation about energy, yes, I think there is a sense that on the left that they have to combat Trump's energy with that of their own passion, and I think it's obviously something that they want to do as well.
Interesting. This is going to be, I mean, to me, and I think, Andy, you would agree, this is going to be an interesting time for the left. We've talked about this a few times on this program, JT, whereas when you get, we have some of the same struggles here, especially here in Colorado, in the Republican Party. When you get the radical part of your party in charge, it can literally abolish the rest of the party if you're not careful. Same things happened here in Colorado with the radical right.
Right. You know, you see a sacrifice of the middle, and it's kind of becomes a no-lose situation to the extremists because either they prevail and they get their policies pursued, or they drive out the people who are resisting them. And even if the party is shrinking, they grow proportionally.
That's right.
And within the party. So, you know, just what you observed, I think you do see that. And you're seeing a very conscious move in this direction, I think, on the left and among Democrats. And, you know, you really think about they need Trump or some sense of unity in that party.
Good point.
Well, Jake.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
No, by all means.
Yeah, no, you're fine.
Well, okay, JT, really quick here. You are obviously an expert on the radical left. So let me ask you a question here. Because there is a radical left and there is a radical right.
Absolutely.
But the radical right, there are two big differences. Number one, the radical right is incredibly small. Okay, we talk about these militias and these people. Then the numbers of them versus the numbers of BLM are 1 to 20. I mean, it's not close. Why is the radical left so much larger and why are they so much more violent?
I think... I have a book that came out late last year that describes some of this. But I think what you saw was going way back into the 1960s. If you look at the old socialist left of America. It basically disbanded. And if you put on your history lesson for the day, you know, the Port Huron Statement from the 1960s and Tom Hayden, the Students for a Democrat Society, basically announced the demise of the socialist left. And so a lot of these people then went into various causes, and they've been incubating in there for basically six decades. And so I think the violence that you see is endemic to a socialist approach. You know, Marxism is a very violent ideology. They absolutely believe class conflict is everywhere, and the only way that you advance to the resolution of that is through a revolutionary strategy. So I think violence is endemic to a lot of these people, and they took that with them into the causes they went into. So you do see this, I think, over and over again. The one of
that's brilliant.
Tesla. Yeah, the one like bombing Teslas. I mean, you know, we always think of the environmentalists as just about the most passive of people. You know, you think of Earth Day and hugging a tree, and you know, it was almost a
well. You like think that, but they sure are showing their true colors.
Absolutely, and you know, we've seen this before, but I think to your point that we saw it. You know, people who used to spike trees in the logging area, but they were a really militant small group. But now that's not the case anymore.
That's right. I mean,
over and over and over in every movement area, you think about it. Think of who is leading that movement, whether it's on immigration or environment, and you look to the left, it's always the radical agenda that's the actual mover. As
true.
You mentioned BLM, you know, we grew up, I did, with the NAACP. Well, it was hardly a violent organization. I mean, but that's not who's really leading the civil rights movement anymore. It's BLM. You know, you look at the environmental movement. This is not the, you know, the Sierra Club anymore. And you see this over and over and over in various causes.
Great point. No, you are, and I get, you know, you're right, JT. I guess the question is, does this help the conservative movement or harm it?
I think it helps it because it creates a reinforcing contrast to the conservatives, which look like, and I think you saw this play out in November, you know, that conservatives look like the reasonable approach, common sense. I mean, you think of so many different areas where the left's actual vanguard ideology is just, you know, open border. You know, virtually nobody outside of the extreme left would have supported that. And I think, you know, conservatives can kind of move in behind them. And all you have to do is just be rational and you have an appeal.
Yep. They scare the normals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great
way of saying it. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. JT, how do folks find you? I know you've got some stuff out on the American Spectator. What's the best way for them to find you?
I have a website for the book. It's jt-young.com, and you will find a whole website there around the book. It also links up to the different publications that I run in. I have a piece out today in Real Clear Politics for people who go there. You mentioned the American Spectator, the Hill I run in. So I'm in various publications, and again, jt-young.com will take you right to the book's website, and from there you can find a lot more information.
Awesome. JT, as always, I appreciate it very much. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You bet.
It's been a pleasure talking to you.
You too. Have a great night.